Hey everyone, it's Nick.
And Lala.
If you've been listening to Scene and you like what you hear,
please share us with your friends.
Subscribe to the podcast.
Follow us on Instagram at Scene the Podcast.
Write a review and just tell us what you think.
And help make this work sustainable by supporting Scene the Podcast on Patreon.
We need our beautiful community and we cannot do this without you.
Like, this is us, like, learning in public and, like, trying to...
Literally learning in public.
Yeah.
We're at Vancouver Public Library.
Yes.
There are glass doors.
Yes.
We're literally learning in public.
Pulling back the curtain of silence.
And learning what freedom feels like. I'm Nick.
And I'm Lala.
This is Scene.
Brown-eyed activism.
Healing at the intersections.
As someone with a chronic illness that worsens with stress, I have become intimately familiar with the need for rest. And as someone with a chronic illness living in an ableist society, I'm intimately familiar with the shame that comes with the need for rest. And that's not the only reason that shame has become linked with rest for me. It's also because I struggled more than some people when it came to finding a direction and establishing a career. It's also because I was often called lazy in my family as I was growing up. It's also because capitalism tells us that our bodies should be machines and that our worth is tied to how much we can produce. I could keep going, and we will, but first, let's just take a second to pause and take a breath and just have a little momentary rest before we dive in. Okay, so Amber Ruffin has declared that spoilers no longer exist, so I guess I don't have to give spoiler alerts anymore when I announce our BIPOC of the week at the beginning of the episodes. I still might do it, but our BIPOC of the week is Trisha Hersey, and she's the founder of the Nap Ministry. If there's anyone out there that's not already following them on Instagram, please do. You won't regret
it. Yes, they are incredible.
Yeah. So from their website, this is how they describe their work. Quote, we engage with the power of performance art, site-specific installations, and community organizing to install sacred and safe spaces for the community to rest together. We facilitate immersive workshops and curate performance art that examines rest as a radical tool for community healing. We believe rest is a form of resistance and name sleep deprivation as a racial and social justice issue. So inspired and led by Trisha's brilliant work on the importance of rest and the power of rest, I want us to talk today about our own relationships with rest, toxic capitalism and grind culture. Those are both terms that the Nap Ministry often uses. The ways that we perpetuate racism and ableism, among other systems of oppression, when we resist rest, and the ways that rest supports both our personal healing and our collective liberation. So let's start at the beginning. Nick, what is your relationship with rest like, and what does rest look like for you in your life?
Okay, so this is a really timely episode for one, because I'm learning about how I don't like rest, or that piece that you mentioned at the beginning about kind of feeling that other people were shaming you for needing to take a moment. It's so real. And I also don't identify somebody with a disability or disabled. So even in my able-bodiedness, like, I'm at a time in my life right now where I'm trying to deliberately rest. Like, I'm unemployed. I quit a job that I felt didn't serve me. And it's really difficult for me to rest in this moment that is supposed to be intentionally about resting. So anyways, like, man, my relationship to rest is weird, and probably I'm really grateful for us talking about this, because I have questions for you about how you navigate it, given what you've experienced with respect to, like, chronic illness and disability, and also in, like, therapy practice, and how you integrate resting as part of your I don't know, like rest and self-care. I'm just like curious about all those things because I don't think that I'm the not that they're supposed to be the best, but I don't think I'm very good at resting. I don't think I really have a great orientation to it. So that's mm-hmm. where I'm coming from today.
Okay. This will be a great episode for you, I hope.
I hope so, yeah.
Yeah. And please jump in with the questions you have at any moment. So Trisha Hersey says, rest is always available to us. We must reimagine rest. My imagination has not been stolen by white supremacy. I'm free in so many ways because I have refused this theft. So something that comes up a lot that Trisha talks about with the NAP ministry is that people will say, I don't have time. I don't have time to rest. I can't do that. I have bills to pay. I have like things to do. And something that's really important is realizing that rest doesn't have to look like going to a spa. And it doesn't have to look like taking a nap in the middle of the day. Although both of those things are amazing. And maybe sometimes we can find more room for it than we thought. But it can be a lot of other things. So the NAP ministry gives a lot of examples like closing your eyes for 10 minutes or daydreaming by staring out of a window, sipping tea before bed in the dark, praying, taking a long hot bath, taking a break from social media. I think the point is that rest can look all kinds of different ways, and we really need to explore what it can look like for us. And I love the way she talks about imagination and the freedom that it can give us.
It kind of sounds like it's a rest as an opportunity to like disconnect when thinking about imagination and like that intentional stepping away from everything for just a moment, if you can.
Yeah, there's so much unnecessary busyness in our lives, and there's so much noise pollution in our lives, right? Like there's always a screen, there's always an artificial sound of some kind.
Mm-hmm.
And
really, yeah. It's endless.
Yeah. I also I think it's in maybe dance movement therapy where they talk about the need for sort of balance. So if you're using a lot of a particular type of energy, then you just need something on the other side. So something for me that I've found having fibromyalgia, it's all about balance and moderation. That's putting it kindly. Like I always say it's like everything's a catch-22. It's like, so I have fatigue, but then if I spend too much time lying down and not moving, then my pain gets worse. So it's like always having to like be like, okay, I need to like rest more, but then I also can't just like lie in bed. So anyways, I've had to explore different ways to rest. And so for me, often if I'm exhausted in the middle of the day, playing the piano will actually make me feel better than lying down. Or if I've just had a bunch of sessions with clients, going for a walk and listening to music, it really recharges me. It's like a different type of energy.
Mm-hmm.
I take baths at night. When I'm eating, I'll look out the window instead of at a screen. I usually have my phone on silent with no vibration because then it's just not, I'm not on call to my phone.
Right. Yeah. Bound to it. That's interesting about the like doing the opposite piece.
Yeah.
Because like, in the midst of this job that I was doing over the summer, it took a lot of like mental energy, like reading and synthesizing and parsing through things, but also like it was a very emotionally draining. And I found myself like after work also wanting to do other things that I usually love to do, but I found myself kind of like resisting wanting to write or really wanting to even journal, which are things that I usually love to do, and instead opting for like, yeah, something completely on the other end of the spectrum in terms of respite. So like, yeah, going outside was definitely the thing for me, and being able to be in nature wherever I could to, I guess, like counteract just like the heavy screen time was so mm-hmm. needed and really cleansing.
Mm-hmm. So now that we've kind of introduced our own relationships with rest, I want to jump right into the NAP ministry's teachings on why rest is a racial justice issue. And I just want to introduce, so they use the term grind culture a lot, and I just want to name that I think that this is a term that's used quite broadly, especially when it's being critiqued, but I do think that that term comes from Black culture. Is that, Do you agree? Or no?
I don't know. Actually, that's interesting. Okay. That's interesting. I thought that it was kind of more from, I want to say, like, millennial culture of saying, like, we're always on the grind, grinding hard. But then, yes, you're right. The term, like, grinding, like, always grinding is definitely from Black people. But the grind culture, as like, aspect seems like corporatized millennial shit. If that makes sense?
Yeah. Yeah. So I agree with that. And I just wanted to name that because I do think that the term and the sort of, like, a certain conceptualization of it, to me, it comes back to, like, to rap.
Yeah,
which
it is.
Comes like from hustling. A very specific, yeah. Exactly, from a very specific experience. But I wanted to name that, first of all, because I don't like to use terms from Black culture without like naming that that's what I'm doing. But also because there is very specific, I mean, we're about to talk about the very specific racial element to this. And like you said, I think it has the sort of like phenomenon of approaching work and life this way has become more widespread, I think, because of increasing economic inequality and instability. So a lot of millennials who, you know, we can't find jobs that are just like, we have one full-time job and it pays all of our bills and gives us, you know, the benefits that we need and enough to sort of build a future. So we're kind of always looking for like,
side hustles or exactly. Something else to support us and sustain us. Interesting also, exactly. Like as an aside to the word grind and grind culture, it also just speaks to the pervasiveness of like hip hop culture as like yes. A thing that we use to describe just our day-to-day life, even if we're not Black people. So yeah, it's yes. Interesting. Yeah.
Yeah, totally. So getting back to why rest is a racial justice issue. So Trisha Hersey says, grind culture is violence. Grind culture is a collaboration between capitalism and white supremacy. It traces back to chattel slavery and plantation labor. You truly can't understand the foundation of it without studying the history of slavery. The tools used to make enslaved Africans into human machines to build the entire economic system in the U.S.
It's so, man, yeah. Like, just even the binary of, like, lazy, productive. That whole, it's so steeped in white supremacy. It's so fucking racist and ableist and all these other, you know what I mean? But like, yeah, you're right. And they're right. You can't really talk about, we can't talk about rest and like grind culture and all that shit without rooting it back to why do we need to grind in the first place? We're like, who told us and how and for what reasons? And it's like, well, to like build what is now known as America, like, you know, to create the infrastructure of economy and all that shit on the backs of enslaved people.
Yeah. And the idea that we exist to work.
Right.
Like, I don't think that concept, like, obviously work is a part of life, but I don't think that that concept that we exist to work and that life is only about work would have existed outside of slavery, right? Like that's what that is the idea that these people's existence, they only exist to work.
Yeah. And to like materially benefit other people's end goals.
Yes.
Because it wasn't like those enslaved people were reaping the benefits of their own labor. They were dispossessed from it. Like that was the, you know, the whole point of maintaining slavery, right? Yeah.
Yeah, and people who do benefit from their own labor, I mean, should be able to rest and have been able to rest, right? Like people who were benefiting from that, they had other aspects of life, right? Like quiet and spare time, you know, leisure, right? Like that's also a part of life.
Yeah.
And maybe, I mean, arguably the most important part of life. I mean, work exists. It has to exist in order to keep us alive, right? Like we've always needed to get food and like make sure our shelter is okay and take care of each other and things like that. But so much of what we value about life, you know, art and culture and spirituality, like those things can't exist if we're in, you know, a 24/7 work mentality.
Yeah. And it's interesting, even you talk, just mentioning about how, of course, we've needed to like, you know, gather food or do, you know, those things to like keep our ability, like survive basically. But I think so often under capitalism, it's like, everything gets conflated. It's like the things that we actually need to survive are then conflated under the guise of capitalism, where it's like, well, and you also need money, which is like this made up thing. Like there's some things that we like tangibly need, like food, obviously, water, you know, those things. But mm-hmm. then it's like having to, yeah, I find it interesting when we're talking about working and grinding, we're not, I mean, a lot of us are, I think, are talking about building capital, like having actual money. Mm-hmm. And that's like the end goal. Whereas I think for a lot of us, like for some of us at least, like the idea of just being able to have like those bare needs met, we see that as like, well, duh, that's a given. I want more. Like this idea of excess is so, I think, also rooted in grinding, because it's also like, well, when does it stop? Like, when is enough? How much is too much? And yeah.
Yeah, and that, I think, is a part of that toxic capitalism, that idea yeah. that more and more and more and more and more, which is, I think, also part of why we see, you know, the world literally breaking down, because we have extracted more than the earth is able to give us, and not because we've needed to, but because we want this excess.
Right.
So getting back to Adrienne Marie Brown's question of, like, what would be enough?
Mm-hmm.
What would be enough? What's enough food in this moment? What is enough? How many would be enough orgasms? How much money is enough?
Mm-hmm.
Right?
Mm-hmm.
And I would also say, you know, again, with this racial justice issue, just to make it really explicit, there's a pay gap, obviously, between races and genders. And of course, the intersection of those things. And a pay gap is a rest gap, right? If I'm...
Oh, man, that's such true. Yeah.
Yeah. Like if I'm making, you know, $80,000, $100,000 between the hours of 9 to 5, Monday to Friday, then I have a lot more time on my hands to rest and to do what I want with it than somebody who has to have 3 jobs to survive.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
So,
and it's kind of baked into it. Like there's no way around it, which is why it's always so wild to me when like the response to, I don't know, people who have the 3 jobs is like, work smarter, not harder. It's like they literally are doing both things and mm-hmm. still coming up short compared to you mm-hmm. who's able to say that. But you know what I mean? Like, it's mm-hmm. just like it's a supreme disconnect, because some people don't even have those options because of exactly. who they are. And they're, you know, beholden to systems that don't really care about like their individual genius. It's more like, like you are in this body and this person's in this body and people are that in that body are going to get paid more. We don't really know why. That's just the way it is. Like that's to yeah. me what like the pay gap really boils down.
We just
down
somehow
to.
Yeah. perceive this person's work as so much yes. more valuable.
Yes.
And who's to say why, right?
Yeah. Perceiving people's work as more valuable as like part of the problem with grind culture, or like as one of the symptoms or one of the reasons why we, as racialized people, for example, like mm-hmm. are working, you know, the quote unquote, like twice as hard for just the same amount or whatever. It's
or
like,
for half as much.
Or for half yeah. as much. Yeah. We talk about these things, and sometimes it's easy for me to talk about them abstractly, but then I'm like, but that actually, like, I've seen my mom have to do that. Like, I've seen my mom have to work like twice as hard as a lot of people to get just yeah. the same amount. And so it's like, it's very real. It's so real.
Yeah. We so often just conceive of it as a wealth gap. And that is true. But again, like money gives you time.
Yeah.
Right? Because you don't have to have as many jobs. You can pay somebody to clean for you. You can take some time off work, you know, mm-hmm. all of these mm-hmm. things. And then, of course, rest is also an ableist issue or a disability justice issue. So as people with disabilities, we're forced to try to survive in a world that's so fast-paced that people in perfect health are burning out all of the time. Right? It's like, how often do you talk about people who are able-bodied, who don't have chronic illnesses or disabilities, talking about how hard it is to keep up with
yep,
the pace
the
of everything today? Yeah. So then we live in this culture that shames us, that shames everybody, even, again, like an able-bodied person for having needs. And then those of us who have more needs than, or even not even more needs, those of us who have more unmet needs.
Okay, right.
Right, because, yeah. you know, there's a lot that able-bodied people can maybe survive without. Like, we live in a culture now that's not very care focused. Like, there's so much work and wealth and like independence that we don't have a lot of the interdependent ties that used to exist in communities to help us take care of each other. And a lot of able-bodied people suffer from that, but they're able to still survive and maybe keep that suffering quiet because of the shaming that capitalism does. Mm-hmm. But a lot of disabled people can't survive that. Mm-hmm.
And like Mia Mingus, I remember reading something that she said that was, I'm going to really butcher it, but she was talking about, and I'm sure we mentioned this before, this idea of like crip time and just like the mm-hmm. need for taking things, the need for people, for disabled folks to maybe take like time doing things that the society says should be done in X amount of time. And also the need for like needing to rely on or depend on other people to be able to do those things, and how mm-hmm. like, yeah, as you're talking about this, it's like even the people who are supposedly supposed to be able to like do all the things are suffering. So like how worse well off are folks who have more unmet needs? Mm-hmm. That's, yeah, I had not thought about that for in that framing for a minute. So thank you.
Yeah. And so I wanted to read this excerpt of Lia Lakshmi Pyapsna Samarasena. And yeah, I really appreciate what she's talking about in this excerpt, partly because of, you know, the experience of being someone with a chronic illness, but also talking about people who are able-bodied and the impact that they're having on us and the culture that gets created. Mm-hmm. So she says, quote, "I know a lot of people who are all like, oh yeah, sustainability, yada yada. But then there's this thing where it's like, there's no other way to write or tour a book that's not a really abled one. I've had people I know be like, oh, you know, I'm doing 20 events in 30 days. You know how it is, right? And I'm like, I do, but I won't or I can't anymore. And I'm not coming from some trust funded rich daddy or partner place where I don't have to work. I've just kind of barely made a lower middle class living in the last 3 years. I support a lot of folks in my community financially and have a high monthly medical and disability support bill that I pay out of pocket every month. I have to make a living. But I am invested and not alone in figuring out all the different ways with our different body minds we can create truly cripped out, sustainable ways of making money and getting our work out there. It doesn't have to look like one abled burnout way in order to be successful. It really doesn't. One thing I wish abled artists and activists would do in solidarity is A, listen to us, and B, also slow down so it doesn't feed into, oh, let's get the fast one over here, not the crip slow one."
Wow. I mean, that end part, it is like back to the point of whose work we value. Because it's like we're like in the sense of, you know, activists or organizers or folks who are able-bodied and are able to like zip zap do all the things, you know, we take up so much space. Like that's taking up so much more space and opportunity because we can do it the fastest. Like having you say that out loud makes me go, oh my God. And as a piggyback off of our previous episode of like wanting to do things, wanting, feeling like, oh, if I don't get this done, like someone else can take my idea, feeling like possessive, feeling like, you know, I have to, it's only one person, like all that stuff kind of amounts to, well, then we have a whole community of our folks who need to take more time and need, you know, like that's how that they'll get like this great work done. So alienated from being able to have that work materialize and be, let's say, like known for or paid for or hired for their genius, because so many of us are like rushing around to like be the first one in the room. Anyways, that's just fucking wild to me. And I thank you for that quote, because like it's making me rethink how much space I'm taking up in, how much space I'm taking up in general, but in relation to folks who are not able-bodied, disabled folks, mm-hmm. folks with chronic illness, folks that need time to do their work, their genius, and space and that support. You know, anyways, I'll stop.
No, thank you for saying that, because yeah, it's just a reminder of how disability justice actually needs to be at the center of everything that we do. And in centering disability justice, we're also attending to everybody, right? Because we all have bodies that have needs. And there's a reason why we often say, you know, temporarily able-bodied, right? Mm. Because nobody is able-bodied forever. That's not a thing. We're inherently fragile. And so there are people whose needs aren't being met now. And that's by centering those of us who don't have our needs met, we're really meeting the needs of everybody.
Yeah, and the beauty in slow, like there's so much, I think similar to what we were talking about in the previous episodes of like the process and the journey of getting to our end goals, there's a lot to learn in process and mm-hmm. in that intentional pausing that is built, like, you know, inherent in resting.
Yes.
That I think we end up missing out on because we're rushing to, I don't know, like we're just rushing. We're living under urgency all the time. Like,
yeah, exactly. And I would say, I think it benefits everybody. It benefits everybody's wellness and growth and healing and liberation to remember that. And I would also say, you know, it's not just about you, and it's, you know, it's not just about me. It's not about a specific person. So maybe you enjoy your fast pace, and you know, that's fine. But I think, again, you also need to take some responsibility for how you impact people around you. And like, it's really frustrating for me, I know, to be on social media and to see able-bodied and class-privileged people who claim that they're anti-oppressive and that, you know, they'll name ableism as something that they struggle against, supposedly. But then they're constantly talking about how far they're pushing themselves and how hard they're working and how little they're resting, as if that's not contributing to this world that sick and disabled people can't survive in.
Like, not only is it unsustainable for you, but, like, thinking about how, if it's your preference to do that, how declaring it to the world is harmful to other people.
Yeah. You like, know. How are you perpetuating toxic capitalism? How right. are you perpetuating this shaming of people who can't keep up with that pace?
Right. Yeah. Right. Yeah. I think so many of us, our identities are rooted in like being type A or being like, you know what I mean? Like, there's so much hinging on like our own like personalities. We developed whole personalities about like being that person that doesn't get any sleep and like pulls the overnighter and like gets the job done and whatever. And our society, and, like we've talked about this entire episode, like obviously privileges those of us that can keep up. But like, I don't know. It's like, so we get the thing done, but we're not well. But we're not well, and we've just contributed to other people's unwellness and a society in which people who aren't well are shamed for being unwell. So it's like, in the grand scheme of things, I'm just like, well, what do we actually stand to gain except for us having accomplished something, you know?
Yeah, exactly. So I want to read this quote from Trisha Hersey that speaks to all of this. So she says, "I want to talk about urgency and how it functions as a part of grind culture. Why are folks always making non-urgent things urgent? Why do you navigate your life like this? Take time. When capitalism burns up, and it will, many would still be rushing and grinding. I want us to look deeper into the spiritual dimensions of this. This is not an invitation for you to type back a quick response on this thread. Go meditate and journal for months. Keep it to yourself. Rest with it."
I have a question for you. Do you think that rest and self-care are synonymous things? And because you had mentioned like, you know, resting doesn't always look like going to a spa, but I think a lot of people would say that the idea of like going to a spa or even closing your eyes for 10 seconds or 10 minutes is like part of like self-care. Do you see self-care and rest as the same thing, or is rest a form of self-care? And how have you been able to support clients in maybe cultivating rest and intentional self-care as rest in their daily lives?
Yeah, I think that rest is certainly a form of self-care. I think there are other forms of self-care too that are not rest. Like I think, for example, creative expression it can be a form of self-care, but it's not necessarily rest, although I'm sure it can be. So I think they're very linked in rest. I think rest is always self-care, but self-care isn't always rest. And in terms of supporting clients to find that, I think I'm really big on inner child work. And so when folks have feelings coming up, like responding to those feelings as if it's, you know, they're a beloved child. And how would you take care of this beloved child? So I think often people are more able to give care than receive it. So I think kind of creating that like relationship with different parts of the self can be really supportive to actually being able to receive from yourself.
Okay, that's interesting. Like if I'm thinking about, for example, my own like inner child and things that I know I've needed in the past, but maybe couldn't get those needs met. Or when I did, they were really great. And I maybe I've steered away from that. It's like finding opportunity to like be silly. Like, for me, like the idea of rest feels like it's supposed to be inherently non-productive. And I think that's the part that I struggle with the most, is just doing something for the sake of doing it because you need to do it and not because it's like, so in the conversation of journaling, for example, I know how I mentioned like having a job where it was really intellectual and a lot of like super taxing. Then afterwards I was like, I don't even want to journal. And journaling ended up feeling like, oh, I need to write lists of like reflection. And it felt like a chore. Like, you know what I mean? Like everything ending up feeling like a chore as opposed to like something that can recharge you or bring you joy or offer opportunity to be still. And I guess from listening to you say that, the inner child thing, and then me thinking about wanting to be silly or like throw a temper tantrum or something like that, I don't even know, it just makes me think, like, I guess for me rest is divorced from productivity, and like, you know, the product of my rest isn't supposed to be to like be able to go, I don't know, and like start my new business or something like that. Like, cause I think we will use rest and self-care as like, could get your mind right so that you can go off and do the thing. And it's like, yeah, that is hopefully something that you can do after you rest. But also resting is just important inherently. Like you just need it to need just because.
It is. And you do need it just because. And I think we also maybe need to expand our idea of what doing something means. You know?
Say it.
Yeah. So again, with like Trisha Hersey's work, it's all about reimagining these things. So she also says, you are doing something when you're resting. While resting, you are allowing your brain to download new information, healing from trauma, disrupting toxic capitalism, honoring your body, participating in a spiritual practice. And it can be really hard, again, to separate that, you know, to not then go into rest and be like, okay, I'm going to rest and then that will give me like 10 minutes of healing from trauma, which will, you know,
you're looking like a Lego into, right now.
Exactly. Like a machine. Yeah, exactly. Machine, right. Like, yeah. Because it's hard to not go into that machine version of capitalism.
Yeah.
But I think we need to reimagine what it is to be doing something and what that means.
Yep.
And this is why I wanted to transition into talking about how rest supports our healing and liberation. And so much of it is through imagination. Trisha Hersey says, if you cannot imagine or envision a way for you to rest for 15 to 30 minutes a day, how will you be able to imagine or envision a world without police terror and equality for all? Our lack of imagination is intimately tied to our liberation. Our dream space must be cultivated.
Okay, read me. Like, goddamn. Because honestly, there's a lot of self-judgment around that I have about myself in terms of like taking the time to, yeah, like the dreaming, the brain, like the just brainstorming, like the with no productive thing that it's hinged upon, but just for the sake of doing it. It's like a practice, right? That's what it sounds like as she's talking about. Like, if you can't like spend 30 minutes right in that sort of decompressed mind chilling, how are we supposed to imagine new worlds that we want to create? It is actually impossible, because then we're just going to be moving in the motions of like, this seems like it's the right thing to do, but it's like, well, does it feel right? Like have we like even endeavored to like visualize what that could feel like or look like or sound like. You know what I mean?
Yeah. So here is a question that I like to sometimes ask clients. So if systems of oppression didn't exist and had never existed, and we weren't constantly locked in this battle to fight back and to survive violence, what would you want to spend your days doing?
Damn. Being in community with people, connecting with mm-hmm. people, talking with people, learning about people, like sharing stories with people. I love people. Mm-hmm. That mm-hmm. is what brings me, makes me feel the most aligned and like nourishes me. Mm. And I think I've always known that. Mm-hmm. But in this season of my life right now, of like, in trying to be intentionally restful and resting and stuff like that, it always comes back to like, oh, you're unemployed. You know, like capitalism always has a way of sleeping in. So it's fascinating to just imagine that. And then the bubbles kind of popped at some point and you're like, but like, how would you get, like, how could you sustain yourself from doing that? But I guess your question is more about like, imagine capitalism didn't exist and mm-hmm. imagine all these systems that usually seep in to fuck up that amazing dream world of yours didn't exist. How would it be mm-hmm. like? And it would just be like hanging out with people that I love and learning from people and learning about people's stories, basically, without yes. the need to be like, how will I get paid to do that? Like, is that a job? Like, is that, you yeah. know, it is just the endless barrage of those kinds of questions. And thinking about that separate is, I don't know, liberating? What would yes. you do? Like, back at you.
Yeah, I've thought about this, and I mean, I don't fully know. I think that I would want to spend time in, like, sacred spiritual space. I think that would be really big for me. I'd want to be in nature. I would want to sit with people with, you know, for the purposes of growth and healing, because I think healing is a natural process. And even without violence, there still would be things to heal from. So I would want to do that, but it would also be very, very balanced with time spent in solitude, in nature and in like a spiritual space. I'd also want to spend a lot of time with music, like to be mm-hmm. Like playing an instrument, like singing, that kind of thing. And so then when we ask ourselves those questions, then we can start to ask, okay, how can we incorporate a little bit of that into our lives? Like, right. where is there room for that? So for you, when you think that's like what your spirit most yearns for, what do you think resting with other people could look like, right? So like, you're like, mm. I want to spend time with other people, but not in a way where it has to be, you know, turned into a career. Like, right. yeah. what might that kind of regenerative time with people you're in community with look like?
Oh, that's so interesting. I mean, it could look like, do you remember when we were kids and we had drop everything and read day? Deer day?
Yeah. And oh it was God, like, yeah, that, you know, wow, that brought me back to kindergarten. I right? haven't thought about that in a long time.
Do you know
yeah.
what I mean? But like that sort of, you're all in your sleeping bags. You're all just like there. You might be like, some friends might be talking, but for the most part, everyone's like in their own kind of internal world. And then like, it's recess. We all kind of just like chat about stuff. And then we go back to deer day after lunch kind of thing. Like, I really appreciate what you just said about wanting to be in stillness and solitude, because I'm such an ambivert. And so I said that out loud, said my piece out loud about like wanting being social. And then I'm like, but I also love my alone time. And I like the idea of being in it with your people, but being in stillness with them, or being like mm-hmm. tending to your own little world in community, like together. Wouldn't it be so cool to do a collective community deer day after COVID's over? Mm-hmm. I would love that. That'd be so dope. But anyways, yeah.
yeah. And like the Knapp Ministry used to have events like that where,
okay, cool.
I don't think it was like with reading necessarily specifically, but they would have events where people would gather and like take a nap together.
Okay.
In like a big space.
Right, yeah. right. I love it. I love it.
I guess what is really feeling important for me right now is remembering how much does get drowned out when we're constantly on screens and we're constantly, you know, engaged with like artificial noise around us. and how much that really leads us to not know what we need and to not hear our bodies. So there's all kinds of ways. I mean, we've already talked about all kinds of ways that we've had to dishonor our body's needs because of toxic capitalism. So something to reclaim, right? And I think we do need quiet in order to start to reclaim that.
Yeah, the busyness, I mean, there's so much that we can use and rely on to disconnect us from how we're really feeling and what we really need, like you said. I think about that all the time. I'm like, am I doing this to like not be still with my own thoughts? There are times when I go for a walk and I live on the North Shore and like going around areas where it's like kind of more forested or like there might be a creek or something like that. And I have to consciously be like, no, I mean, there are times when I want to go and put music in my ears, but then I'm like, I also just want to be here and walking and breathing and that's it. And not be like, not feeling like even in my practice of trying to cultivate some rest or some like solitude that I need to do other things. And so it's just like being in the moment with that one activity basically has been something that has been helpful for me to be like, I'm just walking right now. I'm not walking, listen to a podcast. I could do that if I wanted to, but I know that that is a way to distract myself from just being still with my own thoughts. And like, I guess there's something to be said about when we're not able to be still with our own thoughts. Like there's lots of reasons why that could be difficult, but I feel like I stand to gain so much more when I can be still with my thoughts and process in just walking and breathing in the sunshine.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, totally. And I just want to, again, like emphasize the way Trisha Hersey talks about imagination, I guess, because it's so easy when we are living in this world with these systems of oppression. It's so easy to feel like we can't rest, like there isn't time and there's too much that's important that we have to do. And again, I just think it's so important for us to really sit with the fact that we, first of all, we need to take care of ourselves because we need to be here and we need to keep being here. We can't burn out and destroy our health and kill ourselves to work, you know, to work for a cause, because then we won't be here to support that cause, right? Or to support the people that we love.
Yeah.
And that we won't be able to imagine a different way if we spend 24/7 locked in that same way that doesn't give us any space or time to think or reflect or imagine or create.
Yeah.
Yeah. So I want to end with a really beautiful essay that Trisha Hersey wrote on the Knapp Ministry website, because it really demonstrates everything that I think is really important about this topic, including, you know, that rest is essential and must be claimed no matter what the circumstances. That we actually have to do the things that we talk about as activists and healers, that, you know, it doesn't work unless you practice it. And that rest is not avoidance or an excuse to check out, but it's actually a foundational part of the work. Mm. And this essay is big and emotional, so I want us to just take a couple of breaths before I read it, and then I think we'll end with that. But then maybe we'll debrief on it in our after show, which we put up on Patreon.
Dope.
If that works. Okay. Yeah. So I'll just take a breath. So Trisha says, I have claimed the year of 2020 as the year of grief, the year of rest. I took an impromptu 3-week Sabbath during the height of the uprisings for Black Lives that spilled millions onto American and international streets. I watched with pride as people reacted and protested in a way that shows they are still human. We are divine human beings. Our culture forgets and hides this truth. I was beaming with pride and joy to see, but I am still processing. So I signed off from work emails, social media, technology, and labor to grieve and process. I practice what I preach. I am still processing a global pandemic. I am grieving all the lives lost and missed opportunities. I miss gathering for our collective napping experiences. I am disgusted by our racist health system that has been this way forever. Black, Latino, and Indigenous people are dying at higher rates from COVID-19 due to this sick system. I'm sitting in this grief and will not look away. I want to mourn and lament and realize this culture is not set up with systems of care to allow others to stop long enough to rest. This is why this ministry exists. I'm sick of rushing and the obsession with opening back up and getting back to normal. I never want to see normal or the way it was again. It is time for a new way. Rest and slowing down will be the foundation for this liberated future that many are screaming about online, in the streets during the uprisings for Black lives, and in our hearts. We are not well. We are exhausted and disgusted. I am still grieving from hearing in disturbing detail the lynching of George Floyd by police in Minnesota. I did not watch the video, and I will never watch the video. I protect my heart and eyes from what my bones already know. I am a target in America. This is not new information. It's ancient. So I'm now back from 3 weeks of rest and slowing down. I felt like an outlier the entire time as my inbox is filled up with requests for interviews to speak about the uprisings, to share the repetitive good news of rest that I have been preaching since 2016. People were hungry for a reply, thirsty for me to calm the exhausted beast and soothe the hearts of those who finally decided to wake up to the racial terror that Black folks have been yelling about for decades and centuries. It has always been time for justice. It has always been time to rest. Rest is a form of resistance because it disrupts and pushes back against capitalism and white supremacy. This is our main tenet since we started researching our Rest is Resistance framework back in 2013. We cling to this truth like a lifeboat in a raging sea. We cling to the power of collective care and collective rest, opening the dream space that will allow us to invent and imagine a new world rooted in rest. I am back from Sabbath, still processing. It was a beautiful resistance, and I went in and out of a liminal space of sleep and meditation. I daydreamed. I stared at the sky. May a space to daydream and slow down open to you. May you realize the power of taking rest since no one will give it to you. This is why rest is a resistance and a slow, meticulous love practice. We must continue deprogramming from grind culture. We must continue not turning away from our own terror. We must deconstruct around the ways we uphold grind culture, capitalism, and white supremacy. We must wake up. We will rest. We'll be right back.